All right. Hope you had a great spring break. Welcome back. I thought about math, not calculus per se, but a lot of math over spring break. So that was fun for me. Something about coherent special Ehrenschein trees, but I probably won't get to that in this class. You can ask me about that sometime. Now, okay, let's kind of remember where we are, right? We're covering chapters 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 in Calculus Volume 3, the traditional areas of multivariable calculus. And we started out with some 3D geometry, vectors, lines, planes. We got some curves, including curves in 3D space. Did stuff like arc length, curvature, normal vector, tangent vector. And then chapter 4, curved surfaces, which can have things like tangent planes, and you can have, of course, then an arrow perpendicular your tangent plane, all that great stuff. Local minima or maxima if you turn it upside down, saddle points. Okay, so chapter 5 is going to do stuff with multivariate functions, right? But kind of the other way around. So we use partial derivatives to get things like tangent planes in chapter 4. And here we're taking kind of like antiderivatives. But just like a partial derivative is not quite like a regular derivative from Calculus 1, you know, this isn't a simple antiderivative. If you do a double integral, you can kind of think of it as a double antiderivative. First, you get the antiderivative with respect to x, then the antiderivative with respect to y, or the other way around. You can do it in either order. Remember from Calculus 1, integrals also have a meaning even if you can't get an antiderivative formula. Right? In Calculus 1, if we have a nice, let's say, continuous function, it doesn't have to be differentiable, I suppose. So it could have some zigzag, you know, corners where it's not differentiable. But if it's continuous, right, then we can have a well-defined area, right? Especially if we limit the function to a finite width. And, okay, if the function goes negative, then it's really signed area, and some of the positive and negative area cancel out. But in the simplest case, continuous function, nice finite interval domain, and there's a pretty straightforward interpretation. An integral is an area. So here, in my picture, I made the function have some little corners in it, so it's not quite differentiable, but it's continuous. It's not negative, so simple interpretation. Area under curve is equal to the integral of f from a to b. And you may remember in Calculus 2 doing integrals like this numerically, where you couldn't get a formula for the antiderivative, so you had to just get a number. And you might remember stuff like trapezoid rule or Simpson's rule, sound familiar, midpoint rule. So there's two points of view on integrals. One point of view is, oh yeah, you get an antiderivative, you get a formula. The other point of view is, it's geometrical. It's an area. Okay. And so, if we have some function like that,
we
approximate it, right? If you're using, say, the midpoint rule, you'd have some kind of crude approximation like this. You cut up your domain from A to B into little parts. and then you walk up from the midpoint of each of your little subintervals and find the height of the function at your midpoint. So instead of getting the whole function's graph, you're just getting a finite number of points on the graph. And my drawing is getting rather crude towards the end there.
Okay, so we play this little game here. Technically, you don't even have to have all these subintervals be the same width, although you probably will choose to keep them all the same width to make your life simple. So if we're doing the midpoint rule, then as I said, in the midpoint of each of these intervals, you would just go up to the graph, grab the height, like so, and that you would pretend that that was the height of the function over your whole little subinterval. Now, this is a lie in general, but it's a good approximation if your rectangles, right, that you're making here are skinny enough in the x direction. If these little subintervals are really narrow, then this is not so bad. Sometimes you get lucky, and some places where you're missing stuff gets canceled out by stuff, by places where your rectangles are going too high. Right? Like here, there's some nice cancellation. If your function was actually a straight line graph, then in fact this cancellation would be perfect and the midpoint rule would be exact. But yeah, in general, it's going to be a little off. It's continuity, right? That lets you get away with this stuff. If you have one of these sample points and then you wobble it around a little bit by some amount dx, you're not changing the height of the graph too much. That's what continuity promises. Which is why this can actually work if you have really narrow intervals here. So you have a whole lot of really narrow intervals. All right. And what we'd like to do is take this to the next level. Take this to 3D. If you want to describe the midpoint rule in terms of algebra, it's not as pretty as a picture, I think, but you can write down the formulas, right? So you have, you know, n subintervals here. I guess in this picture, n is 6. I have 6 little subintervals. And you probably cut them up into equal parts. People use something like a delta x or a dx. It's not super important which one you pick. I guess say we use a dx. We don't really need a Greek letter here, right? So we're going to cut it up into n pieces. In this case, n is 6. So the width of the whole thing is, of course, b, the right value minus the left value a, divided into however many pieces. So equal widths. Right? And then, yeah, it gets to be kind of a mess. You have a whole bunch of labels. You know, usually somebody's going to call this, like, this is x is 0, usually, right? And then x1, x2, x3, x4, x5. Those are the five places we cut up our big interval to make it 6 little intervals. So x0 and then x6 are the endpoints A and B. Mm. Okay, but you can cook up a formula based on your equal width choice here, right? X sub I would be the A, right, plus I times dx. And if you wanted one of these midpoints, well, that would just, like this midpoint here is the average of x3 and x4, right? So the fourth interval's midpoint is the average of endpoints x3 and x4. Should I say cut points x3 and x4, right? So the integral is approximated by this Oh, and maybe we can even get really fancy here and write in sigma notation, if you remember that. You should remember that from calculus too, right? So what would we have? We'd have the height, and for the first interval, right, we take the average of x0 and x1, plug it into f. By the time we get to, say, the fourth interval, we take the average of x4 and x3. So I think in general, for the ith interval, we take x sub I minus the one before it, and divide by 2 to get the midpoint, plug it into f. And so we'd add all those up, and to make them areas, we'd have to take all these heights times the corresponding widths. Since it's the same dx, you could actually factor out the dx. So we'd have that little game there for the midpoint rule. As you can see, the formulas, I'm not sure the formulas are as pretty as the picture, but the point is you could come up with formulas if you want to write a computer program to do the midpoint rule or something. Now remember that sigma notation, all it's saying is just from I equals 1 up to I equals n, add up all of those numbers that depend on I. So when there's a picture to go with it, it's pretty clear. Here I'm just saying compute for each of the values I equals 1 through I equals 6 the height on the graph at my 6 special points, and just add up all of those heights. And then multiply by the width of each of the little subintervals, and that would give you the total area. A bunch of heights times widths added together. I just factored out the width. All right. Okay. So if I wanted to do this in 3D, it would be more like this. Imagine we had a sphere, okay? And I wanted to get the volume of the sphere from scratch, right? I'm not even going to take pi for granted. Okay, your theory is that the volume of the sphere, let's see. What was that? Way back in grade school, how do I find the volume of the sphere of radius r? What's the theory about the...
4/3 pi r cubed.
Yeah, 4/3 pi r cubed. Thank you, Brad. Okay. Let's take advantage of some symmetry here. I'm going to cut the sphere into 8 equal parts called octants, okay? What I'm going to do is first, think of the sphere as being centered at the origin, right? So you could think of it as having both positive and negative x, y, and z parts, right? There's places where x, y, and z are each positive and negative in all 8 combinations. So maybe x points out this way towards the back of the room. So let's say we take the front half, so the front half of the sphere where x is not negative, and then maybe the y-axis points off of that way. That's the way we usually have it. Okay, so let's say we cut again, and we take... the right half of the sphere from your point of view. So we have now a quarter of the sphere where x is positive and y is positive, or at least not negative. Then we cut it again. So now we have an eighth of the sphere. We're just going to have the top half of what we cut before, where now z is not negative either. So we'll have an octant. And let's see, 4/3 divided by 8 is a sixth. Algebraically, it would look like this. I centered it at the origin, and then I cut it up 3 times. Okay. So I guess you could think of this as being a really fancy way of computing pi over 6 in the end. All right. We're going to use a spreadsheet. We're going to get a rough value of pi over 6. It's more efficient to do it this way because of the symmetries.
get a good estimate for this and just multiply it by 8. Also, now it's
something where we can think of it as a function. All right, we're going to think of this as something simple. How about we choose r to be 1? Let's focus on the pi over 6 part of it. That pi over 6. Okay, so I'll have a function here. Basically, solve for this, make this an equation. Okay? And of course, remember, z is not negative. So solve that for z. And this will be our z value. So this will be the top of this, the top of our octant here. Okay, fine. So I'm going to have the area, or, well, volume, right, under that. Attempt to draw it. So I want to have the volume under that thing. And well, there's a little annoyance in that here, back in calculus, the calculus 1 example, I just had an interval. Here, if you look at the kind of the xy region under this, it's a quarter circle. But we can kind of cheat, and we can just declare our function to be 0. Over here, have height 0 over there. So we'll just say it levels off right there so that we don't get any unwanted fake volume or something, or undefined numbers. Okay. So just level it off, like this is the ground, and then here is this big octant mound that somebody built, and we're going to find its volume. So let's see. Right here is at x equals 1, right? Because the radius is 1. So we're going to think of this as a double integral. All right. So x goes from 0 to 1, y goes from 0 to 1, say on a little square here. That square will be enough to get all the ground under our little octant. This is some notation. It just means we're going to integrate under that. We're going to integrate, over the rectangle where x and y range from 0 to 1. And then, how do we do it in calculus 1? We'd write an integral symbol, right? F of x, which stood for a height. Then we multiplied by width dx. Now we're going to have a height in the z direction, but we're going to find a volume. So we're going to have height times an area. So how do we get the areas? Well, you need a dx and a dy now. So height times area of base is volume. Where do you get one of these little things from? Well, when you actually do a numerical approximation, this, what's going on? You have a little rectangle, dx by dy here, right? Somewhere inside our big rectangle where x goes from 0 to 1 and y goes from 0 to 1. And then you go up to here, and you approximate the height of that little piece of the octant as being roughly constant, say. Maybe you use the midpoint rule by grabbing, say, the
the midpoint here of this little rectangle, and you go up to the height here on your curved surface.
So you're going to add up the volume of a bunch of columns, right?
You should think of this as being some narrow column. The column has a base, a little base, a little tiny rectangle, dx times dy. Its height is f at some sample point chosen inside the little base rectangle.
So it's just base times height for each of the little pieces.
Now the integral represents the limit where you make the pieces, the dx, dy's, really, really small, so that you get a really, really good approximation of the volume under the curved surface. On your calculator or something, it's all approximations. Okay, so we can do an approximation of this with a spreadsheet.
And I claim you could actually get something like pi over 6, right? Let's see here. So, I can ask my calculator what it thinks pi over 6 is. My calculator thinks pi over 6 is about 0.5235987. So I wonder if I could actually get a direct estimate of my volume here using a kind of midpoint rule. Let's see. Well, get this computer to cooperate with me first. Waking up. And where's the computer? That would explain. The computer was off. If somebody turned it off, let it save power or some brick, I guess. Okay. So again, what are we doing here? We're going to have a table of values. It's going to be a two-dimensional table now. And inside this big rectangle, big is relative. From x equals 0 to x equals 1, y equals 0 to y equals 1. We have this table of values we'll make. Okay, so we're going to have sample points. Let's see if we can do this. And let's see. Off this. So I want to make the simple choice, maybe equally spaced. Maybe we'll do a little, say, 10 by 10. Get 100 sample points. Okay, so how would that work out? So we'd start at x equals 0, and from 0 to 1 is this big width of 1. We cut into 10 equal parts, so we're going to go by tenths. All right, so the first interval, subinterval, will go from 0 to 0.1, and the midpoint of that would be 0.05. The next interval will be from 0.1 to 0.2, and the midpoint of that will be 0.15. And then the midpoint of the third interval is 0.25, then 0.35, and so on. So let's see if we can fix that. Okay. So we'll have some x values. 0.05 for the first one. And then the pattern is it increases by 0.1 each time. Okay. And let's see. Okay, so there we have, these are going to be the midpoints of a bunch of intervals, each of width 0.1. So we cut up the interval from 0 to 1 into 10 pieces. Let's see here. Now, I guess it depends on which way we want x to go. X going down is not the traditional choice, is it? Maybe x is supposed to go to the right. But we can do that. Okay. And I guess here, usually y is supposed to go up. I suppose I could arrange y to go up too if I want. Well, how about we start at the top and then have it subtract down. There we go. Okay, there. Now it's kind of traditional. X goes to the right and Y goes up. Okay, so we have x and y values. Now, at some arbitrary point in here, say at x is 0.65 and y is 0.35, I want to get a value of my function. So my function was giving me the height on that eighth of a sphere, right? Okay, so it was, if we're in the well-defined region, right? So if x squared plus y squared is less than or equal to 1, then we go ahead and compute the square root of 1 minus x squared minus y squared. And that gives us our z value. Otherwise, we just have a kind of a dummy value of 0 so that it doesn't screw up our volume estimate. Okay, so now copy that. Actually, now I need to do a little bit of that trickiness with the dollar signs. The numbers for x should always come from column A, but different rows. So in front of all those A's in my formulas where there were A5s, I better put some dollar signs. And then for the y values, I'm always getting something from row 1, even though the column will vary. So in each of those E1s, there should be a dollar sign in front of the 1. Okay, so I play that little game with Excel so I can copy-paste and not have to do the same thing 100 times. All right, and here we go. Okay, so this is the region now. It's kind of a stretched-out-looking quarter circle, right, under our eighth of a sphere. These are the zeros that aren't going to contribute to the volume because they're not under the sphere. All right. So these are all the sample values. These are all the heights. So what I need to do is I need to add them all up. And that's really easy in Excel. Okay, there's my sum. And I get 52.4779. Well, that's way too big, right? I'm supposed to get about 0.5 something. Ah, but not to worry. Remember, we're supposed to multiply by the dx and the dy, right? We're going to have height times area of base. So we multiply by 0.1 and by 0.1 again because those were the little widths of our subintervals. Okay, that moves the decimal place over a few. Right. So this is going to be our pi over 6 here. Right? Our estimate of pi over 6, 0.52478. Excel can do a better pi over 6, right? Okay, so it's a slight overestimate. Yeah. But hey, I only used 100 sample points, and some of them are kind of useless sample points, right? There's really less than 100 real sample points going on here. Maybe if I'd used, instead of 10 by 10, 20 by 20, 400 sample points, could have gotten a better estimate, right? Okay. But the point is, just fundamentally, this is what a double integral is. All right? You are plugging in different x and y sample points corresponding to little teeny rectangles, in this case 0.1 by 0.1, and you get the heights of some curved surface at different points. And then you just take the height at the sample point times the area of your little rectangle, and that's a volume of some skinny column. And you add up all the volumes, and that's an estimate. If you take the limit to really teeny tiny base rectangles, really small dx and dy, then it converges, assuming your function is continuous, to the exact, to some exact number, in this case to pi over 6. Okay?
So this is what a double integral is, right? There is a way to get, you know, an exact formula and prove it really is pi over 6, right? But you can't always get an exact formula. Sometimes it has to be done numerically, right? Sometimes even you ask your calculator to do it, it won't give you a formula. It'll just give you a number. That's the best it can do. Sometimes that's the best we can do. I can cook up an example, not too hard, where there is no exact formula. Let's see here. What if I ask a... Wolfram Alpha is really smart, right? So can I give it a double integral it can't do? At least not exactly. No exact formula. Let's see if I can make it only give me a number. Okay. Okay. So I'm going to have x go from, say, 1 to 2 in this example, and y go from 1 to 2. I'll let y go from 0 to 1. That's fine. I don't want to have any division by 0 here. So I can't... Actually, can I let x... Yeah, why not? X can be at 0. That's fine. Because I got the plus 1 in the denominator. It's all good. Okay. So this function will be continuous on that little rectangle. And see, what does Wolfram Alpha say? It just says a number. It does not give an exact formula because... it doesn't know how to get an exact formula, and I'm pretty confident nobody knows how to get an exact formula. Okay? The best you could do is something kind of a... what maybe you remember this from Calculus 2, power series. You could do a power series, but that's an infinite sum of numbers, so it's not a finite length formula, per se. Right? So it equals that, all right? So what does that mean? This means there's a... This function, I picked it to have positive values, right? The outputs are positive. Right? So it means that under this function, you graph it at some kind of closed surface, and under that closed surface, from x equals 0 to x equals 1, and y equals 0 to y equals 1. So kind of from here to, it's getting the area under part of this graph. Okay. And that area came out to be 0.67 something, right? Point is, you may not be able to do better than a number. I think I could get my calculator to do this as well. I'm not sure if my calculator's kind of old. Sometimes it's slow, but anyways, if I wanted to do this, if I wanted to do that integral, say, it would be the same thing on the spreadsheet. Instead of this, I would replace the formula with that 1 over 1 plus x squared plus y cubed. Right? Totally. So I can describe kind of formally, not what I did on the spreadsheet. I've got to
careful here. I want to make sure there's no ambiguity about what's what. So we're going to have a rectangle that goes from x equals a to x equals b, y equals c to y equals d. Now, I think it's okay to write it this way as long as you are clear where your x and y limits are, but usually people like to, instead of writing dx, dy, if they have their limits written this way, they'll put the dy here because they want to have the inner integral, so to speak, matching the inner differential. If you have x equals and y equals, this is fine. But if you leave off the x equals part and the y equals part, and you just have the numbers themselves, then it really is important to have it this way, because you want to say, okay, the dy goes with the c and the d limits, right? So y goes from c to d, and x goes from a to b. So if you try and abbreviate it like this, just make sure you have things in the right order. Anyways, we got a little thing here. So, okay, so we'd have, let's have n equal pieces here. And n equal pieces of y. So you'd have these little intervals here. Maybe I'll have to use two different subscripts, right? So there's the ith interval in x land, and then the jth interval in y land, right? Okay. And how does that work out? Let's see. So we'd have a dx, which would just be the total width, b minus a, divided into n parts. And we have the total, length, or whatever you want to call the y part. It goes from c to d. Divide that by n. And then you'd have your x sub I would be your starting point, x sub a. And then you add I copies of that dx. And then x sub j is c plus j dy. All right. And so if f is continuous, right, on your rectangle, and your dx and your dy are small, so to make them small, you might have to make m and n big, right? You might have to divide things up into really teeny, teeny little subintervals. In any case, we've got our nice little rectangle here, right? And it has width dx and length dy, length is going that way in the y direction. So it has this little area, dx times dy. We're saying that the integral is approximated by the volumes of a bunch of these little bitty columns, right? So if you wanted to write this in kind of formal notation, I don't think it's very pretty, but you can write it, right? You never have to write something like this. It's a double sum, right? You have to add up over all the columns, right? All the different x values. And we're... And you have to add up over all the rows, all the different y values, right? And what would you have? You'd have f at the midpoint of your two little
cut points there for x. And then the same for y. And then you'd have to multiply by dx and dy, right? So to get the volume of all the little columns, you would find all these little sample heights by plugging into your function. And, you know, it takes some proof, but you can prove that if your function is continuous, right, then this is actually good, right?
Where did we have?
This should be a plus there.
Damn it.
Yeah. So it's like that one, but
more, right?
Remember, what is continuity about here when you have two inputs, right? Simplest way to describe it is if dx and dy are small, how small depends on the function and the input, but if they're small, then a little change in the input makes only a little change in the output. So you're pretending the function is constant on some little rectangle, and if the rectangle is small enough and the function is continuous, this is not so bad a lie to tell. Gets you pretty close to the truth. In the limit, it becomes exact. And that's what double integral means. Take the limit to smaller and smaller rectangles. Okay. And, yeah. You could have your calculator even do stuff with sigmas if you want, right?
I think I might be able to do something faster just making an Excel table like I did. So, questions about this? Okay. Well, let's see if we can get that 0.673. I said all you had to do is change the function, right? Let's change the function, okay? Copy-paste all this. All right. So we just have to change the rule for the function. So what's the new rule? The new rule is, well, we don't have to zero anything out anymore. It's all good. So we just have 1 divided by 1 plus x squared plus y. What's y? Oh, y is up here. No, wait, I'm getting that backwards, aren't I? X, I put x on the horizontal. So that's my x squared plus my y cubed. Right? Okay, great. And I need to do that dollar sign mumbo jumbo, right? So always do column A for x, and always do row 1 for... Always do row 1 for x, always do column A for y. Okay. Anyways, I will put a copy of the spreadsheet on the website, right? Okay, so here's the numbers we get. All right. Got that right? So there's not a huge variation here. It's pretty close to 1 down here. At these two corners, it's kind of close to a half. It's kind of close to 0.36 up there. Okay. And what do you have to do? Well, basically like before, right? Yeah, 0.674387. What would from Alphan say? 0.673974. Pretty good. Right? Okay. All right. So that was from x went from 0 to 1, y went from 0 to 1. Fine. What if we did something different? How about x goes from 1 to 2, and y goes from 0 to 3? Change it up a bit, huh? Okay. A little different. Number came out a little different. And let's see what we could make of that. Our spreadsheet. How would we adjust things, right? So I want, let's handle the y values first. We want to go from 0 to 3. Okay, so, and say still cut up into 10 parts. Okay, so from 0 to 3, cut it up into 10 parts. Maybe it'll be easier if I start at the bottom. Okay, so from 0 to a tenth of 3, so from 0 to 0.3. And halfway between 0 and 0.3 is 0.15. So this is going to be 0.15. And now the width of each interval is now 0.3 instead of 0.1. So I'm going to go up from the bottom this time. So to that 0.15, I'd need to add a 0.3 to get the midpoint of 0.45 for the next one, halfway between 0.3 and 0.6. And I'll copy that pattern to the others. So here now, the 0.75 is halfway between 0.6 and 0.9. The 1.05 is halfway between 0.9 and 1.2. The 1.35 is halfway between 1.2 and 1.5. And all the way at the end, the 2.85 is halfway between 2.7 and 3. Okay. And the x is from 1 to 2, so it's basically the same. From 1 to 2 is a width of 1, so the widths of the 10 subintervals will still be a tenth. It's just now we need to start at 1 instead of starting at 0. So you just have to add a 1 to all of these. Now they're correct. And let's see. Why am I not getting the right thing here? X goes from 1 to 2. Now my integral is coming out. That's interesting. There's one more change I need to make. In this last formula right here, I need to change the dy, right? The dx is still 0.1, but now the dy is 0.3, right? Because y had a range of 0 to 3, and we divide that into 10 parts. So after I change that, then I get a 0.510338. which is not too far off from what Wolfram Alpha did here. Because Wolfram Alpha is not doing something terribly different from what I'm doing. Maybe a slightly fancier method, but it's essentially this kind of thing. Right? And you could write a computer program to automate all of this, of course. And so it could quickly do, you know, a 1,000 by 1,000 table instead of a 10 by 10 table. And use other tricks to make the estimate really accurate, more accurate than the midpoint rule. Right? Use a higher dimensional version of Simpson's rule or whatever, right? Okay. So, I'll save this and make sure a copy of it goes on the website. Let's So see if you can get this to work. Here's another one of those weird functions where there's not an exact formula for the integral. See if you can actually get your hands dirty. You can use Excel or not. The point is you're going to need 100 different sample points in order to do this estimate. Right? Get your 100 numbers somehow, and then multiply by area base, get the volumes of all your little columns, add up your 100 little volumes, get your estimate. All right? Questions? All right, good luck.